This is CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. New York City, watching the new mayor, Mayor Adams, is Harry Siegel, columnist at the New York Post, senior editor at the Daily Beast. Harry's looking over a recent polling about the mayor's comments, his themes, his remarks about violence and subway safety. Very popular that he's talking about that, about these issues. However, Harry, a very good evening to you. You call it Mind the Gap. The gap can also include, that's a reference to subway. You're saying the right things. Are you doing the right things? Has the mayor at this point explained to the public that these large changes after the pandemic require more than a few months?
The mayor is stuck at the moment. And you can see it in these poll numbers from New York One and Siena. He's been pretty frantically trying to spin. They show that 29% of New Yorkers think he's doing an excellent or good job. And he says you have to count the 36% who say I'm doing a fair job. You know, is excellent, good, fair, or poor. But a 29% tracks with the 32% of New Yorkers who say that the city's headed in the right direction, with 60-something saying he's headed in the 56% saying he's headed in the wrong direction. So there's a lot of pessimism built up already. And there's this interesting gap between what the mayor is saying, which people really like. They want overwhelmingly more police on the trains. There's widespread support for clearing homeless encampments. These are his issues in certain ways, but they're not satisfied with the results they've had so far. And this is happening even as in the last couple of months, it looks like the NYPD is really starting to turn a corner on gun violence and the number of shootings in particular. So that's what Adams is facing, is New Yorkers running out of patience as he hasn't been able to achieve results as quickly as he promised as a candidate. Candidates, of course, have risen to both paint the dark picture and say, I alone can fix this and I'm going to do it right away. What's looming over all this, John, is the sense that, things on the economic front could get significantly worse pretty quickly. The mayor just passed his first budget. It's $101 billion. It's a lot of money. He's putting a few billion aside for rainy days and harder times to come, and that's great. But workforce deals alone will eat all of that up and pretty quickly. And the city is still counting on all of this federal money that's not going to come again. And when that goes away, if we hit a recession, this could be really dark and really ugly. And John, the last two significant recessions in New York were in 2002, after the 9/11 attack, and in 2008, after Lehman's collapse and the near breakdown of the global economy. And in both of those, because of Washington, because interest rates were kept artificially very low to help support banks, most New Yorkers came out of them fine and very quickly. We had much faster recoveries than the nation at large. And it's quite possible we're about to be on the other end of this, where we are an overstretched city that is not going to have the resources to maintain what we've had even to this point, and are in for a season of austerity and very difficult choices. And Adams, of course, who has really limited control over whether or not that happens and is still trying to get New Yorkers back in their offices and comfortable taking the train, will take the hit if things take that turn. So it's going to be a very interesting summer and remainder of the year and administration going forward. He has a lot of difficult things on his plate.
The NYPD budget, you mentioned it in your column. We know that the police have been the focus of the conversation, the argument, the controversy these last years. Has he committed himself to increasing the budget because the majority of New Yorkers want this? Is the police anticipating an increase in budget? And what will that translate into in a time of slowdown?
The police budget's always opaque because so much of it comes down to overtime, and that moves up and down year to year. And it also gets funded in different ways. But in brief, the police budget is up slightly. It's basically the same as it was. The budget for the schools is down slightly. That reflects declining enrollment and the anticipation that that will continue. That's a trend that preceded the pandemic. And Adams, I think, to his tremendous credit on both fronts, is saying some very reasonable things. In effect, that we need to get more out of the resources we have. So he's saying, you know, we need to demonstrate that the public schools are desirable and get more people in, and that's how we get more resources. We can't put the cart of money before the horse of students. With the NYPD, similarly, he's saying we can make more out of the basically flat resources we have, that there have been inefficiencies, which, of course, every person running for office talks about, but he's mayor now, and he's stayed locked in on this, that we can correct to get more out of this workforce. I mean, the NYPD is huge. It's 36,000 officers. Bloomberg liked to call it, you know, the world's seventh largest army. It's not an army. But the problem that the NYPD has, that the New Yorkers have with public safety, just plainly is not a question of resources. And Adams, who's a former Republican, there's some questions about the reasons for that. I think he was sincere in a lot of ways, that he's suspicious of the Democratic establishment, is saying very straightforwardly that the answer is not always more resources. Let me show what I can do with the resources we have. And that's admirable. We'll see if it's sufficient.
At the same time, there are primaries in front of us, two levels of primaries, the first one to do with the state, the second one to do with the federal government. I'm keen on one particular fact, that there's been a new map of reapportionment following the census of 2020. And in some instances, it's putting veteran against veteran Democrat in a blue state. However, the instance that I most am keen on for Harry to help me understand is the larger story of the progressive so-called in the Democratic Party and the establishment so-called in the Democratic Party coming down to the race that right now looks to be dominating the summer conversation. Sean Patrick Maloney, who is an esteemed leader in the House of Representatives for the Democratic Party, and Alessandra Biaggi of the State Senate, who is a legacy of a very popular man once upon a time, but also, most importantly, is backed by Ocasio-Cortez and the progressives of New York. Harry, does this tell us anything about where the Democratic Party is?
How this race goes will be really interesting. The insurgent movement led rhetorically, at least, by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that's had great success in taking out entrenched incumbents, pigs who stayed too long at the trough, as it's been put, is really gunning for Sean Patrick Maloney now. Sean Patrick Maloney is a member of Congress who runs the Democratic Party's operations nationally. So his job is to get Democrats elected to Congress to make sure they keep control of the House. He basically, in this redistricting, pushed out another sitting congressman to shift his own district to one that's just a little more favorable to him, a little north of the city in the Hudson Valley, where there can be competitive general elections. So these are not just guaranteed seats. And in doing that, absolutely, and I think correctly, infuriated the left that said, what are you doing? You're supposed to be watching out for the party as a whole, and you seem to put our interests over yours. So conveniently, in a very complicated game of musical chairs, where sitting members of Congress in New York, by the way, have been fleeing. Tom Suozzi gave up a seat to run for governor. Antonio Delgado gave one up to become the lieutenant governor. Like, there are signs that even in New York, a red wave is rising. So Biaggi left her safe seat in the state Senate, where there's a Democratic supermajority, to try to run for Tom Suozzi's seat. These new maps cut her out of the district she was running in and put her in a very difficult position. And then this left-wing anger of Maloney opened up this new opportunity for her to get into this race, which I think will be interesting. The Working Families Party, which has a significant field and get out the vote operation, dropped its endorsement of Maloney that they'd already made. For complicated reasons, he would still technically have their ballot line, assuming he wins the Democratic primary. But they're now behind Biaggi. They will give her real field support. Maloney has a lot more money, and it's a somewhat moderate district. So this is a fantastic test of how strong the left is, what its organizing abilities are worth, and whether or not they can hold mainline Democrats who do self-serving things that are maybe not in the interest of the party, let alone the progressive movement, to account. It's going to be one of the races to follow closely, and where the outcome is not certain at this point.
In August, we'll watch this all summer. Harry Siegel of the New York Daily News, a columnist, also a senior editor at the Daily Beast. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.